Good morning, brave souls, who are ready to start a legislative session at 8 o'clock in the morning in the new session. Thank you all for being here. Very kindly, Melissa Heisen made a schedule for you all about what we're going to be doing or what times we're going to be here. The schedule is done because we have so many bills. Dennis, you have a count now? 80-something bills where people have requested hearings or bills. For a bonding bill where we're due to make our recommendations to the bonding committee next week. So, we will do that. So we're going to go through this extremely fast. And we welcome DNR, which smartly asked for the most money, so they apparently get the most time to talk to us. It's a wise choice, I would think. Let's just start. We are going to go until 9:30, and we want to get as much information on the table from you between now and 9:30 if we can.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, my name is Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. You should have two things in front of you as well. We have distributed two things for you today to help with our presentation. The first is a copy of our PowerPoint presentation I'll be walking through. The second is, it says 2008 capital budget. It's a packet of all of our capital bonding fact sheets that goes into some more detailed information than what you may have from the finance pages that were submitted and done up over the summer. They have maps, they talk about outcomes, they go into the specific project locations. So between my presentation and these fact sheets, hopefully it will be giving you detailed information to help you make those decisions you'll be making next week. If there's not any information in these that you need more information on, please let us know and we will get that to you immediately. And we'll just go from there. So for the record again, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Our 2008 capital budget bonding request really is the beginning of a new conservation frontier that we've been working on. I want to thank all of you who did make it up to Lake Vermilion and also our other bonding tour sites that are on the bonding committee. It's always a challenge trying to get people on those tours, but I thought we had a lot of participation and great attendance at all of those places that we went to. Our conservation mission, as you're well aware of, deals with drivers of change that we've been talking about. They've changed a little bit, but before I get into this, I just want to talk about how we prepared our capital budget that you have in front of you today. We're still in session last year, April, May. We submit a proposal to the Department of Finance the middle of June, June 15th. Since June 15th, as we all know, the world has changed dramatically. Our initial request was for over $250,000. That detailed request was prioritized with every other agency and local government unit request that was out there, and what we have before you today in the executive branch's recommendations represents about $67.5 million of general obligation bonds. It does not include money for the Vermilion State Park, but we'll get to that when I get to that slide here. Again, the drivers of change that you see, I'll talk about our request and then try to answer questions as we go along. The slide here you've seen before, and we'd like to use it just to remind people of the three areas that we work in dealing with our conservation mission: economic development, recreational use, and natural resources protection. Where we try to live and operate and maintain our operations is with integrated resource management right in the middle. You can see there, dealing with the interdependencies between protection and the use of multiple resources. A good example of this is the Forest Legacy Program, where we simultaneously protect forest habitats, ensure public recreation access, and provide timber-related jobs. Strategic investments in our state park system ensure a healthy, safe, and reliable system that meets the demands of outdoor recreation experiences while preserving the natural and cultural resources of the state. And also our private land conservation programs help us maintain this mission as well. We have some new drivers of change that we're dealing with. We call it the new conservation frontier, and hopefully we'll be successful in that. We've had a similar slide that we've talked about with you in previous sessions, but you can see it's changed a little bit. Energy, Demographics and water and land use are really driving our day-to-day management decisions and our long-term decisions for the future. For the first time, land is becoming a public value, a public commodity, the value of land and what's grown on it. Carbon sequestration. We're probably a few years away, but when we get to a carbon trading system, cap and trade system, the land that the DNR operates for the state, wildlife management areas, forests, SNAs, the peatland areas, are going to provide tremendous value to not only the state, but to the sequestration of carbon throughout the world, actually. Also, the pressures that we see with commodities, the price of corn, the price of wheat, taking land out of conservation reserve programs or other RIM-type programs, we're going to lose probably over 100,000 acres this year that will be put back into production. Between Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, the central areas of our country, we'll probably see 1 million acres of land that was in conservation programs removed and put back into production. If you figure one pheasant or one duck or however you want to look at it per acre, we're looking at the loss of 1 million pheasants in the metro, or the central part of our country. That changing demand for energy and also water and land use is really driving the decisions we're making today. And also the changing demographics. Our world is getting older. For the first time, we're seeing more people over the age of 50 than are in school right now. It's really forcing us to look at the way we operate, the way we're planning, and the way we're going to be developing our outdoor recreation system in the future. On the water and land use side, protecting intact natural lands and waters from conservation and fragmentation is of utmost importance. Restoring critical land and water habitats damaged by past use, and also long-term monitoring and reporting of conservation results is just critical, especially in this climate. It's always critical in the climate of limited resources and increasing demand. So those are just some of the drivers that we're working with right now. Our bonding proposal is broken up into 4 priority action areas. You've seen these before: health and safety, conservation, outdoor recreation, and assets. Under the health and safety category, which is our number one priority, this is in our budget. Our number one priority is health and safety. Forest firefighting is our top priority, along with some other health and safety issues. We have 3 projects here: flood hazard mitigation grants, dam repair, reconstruction, removal, groundwater monitoring and observation wells, which is something new I'll talk about when we get to that slide here in a few minutes. You've seen some of these pictures before in the past. These are pictures of the 2007 flood in southeastern Minnesota, damaged on our land. And I want to say thank you for your quick action during special session to provide the DNR with some local funds and some funds to deal with these issues. The Root River Trail system is up and running. We're working in the Whitewater State Park to make sure that data will be up to the highest caliber once we get back into the operating season again. The major floods in 97, 01, 02, 04, and 07 have spurred efforts for flood protection throughout the state. And preventing flood damage is cost effective. This slide here shows Crookston, Minnesota. And the shaded areas, the 5 neighborhoods that are at risk from flooding. The $15 million we're requesting in this program will match, provide purchase and removal of residential and commercial structures from the floodplain, relocation of businesses, and the construction of levees, flood walls, control structures, diversion channels, and impoundments. Federal projects that may proceed with these fundings will include Montevideo, Breckenridge, Roseau, and other hazard mitigation projects in federally declared disaster counties. State and local projects include Browns Valley, Crookston, Granite Falls, Austin, Moorhead, Oak Fork Township, North Ottawa Impoundment, and of course Representative Anzell's Canis Steel Mine. So we are working with those folks up there, doing a reanalysis of the outlet options. Currently, there's been a proposal that would include 2 siphons, and it's estimated to cost about $3.6 million. We're reevaluating that. We built some concerns about the siphon design, the ongoing operation and maintenance. Hopefully we can come up with a better mousetrap, so to speak, that would be a gravity-fed system that would reduce those long-term operation and maintenance costs, and then we need to figure out who will pay for those and operate that system.
Before you go on to your next subject on the Canis Steel Mine pit, Are you suggesting that you're going to come in with a proposal that's less than $3.6 million?
Madam Chair, members, currently we're evaluating the cost of the project. I don't know where that will fall out. Right now, there's no immediate threat of the dam breaking. The level of water rise has decreased. Some of the funding would come out of this parcel of money, the $50 million, but we will need a new rider that will deal with the cost share if it's to vary from the 50-50 statutory requirement.
Well, that brings up a point I was going to ask later. Do you all have a bill draft that you have introduced or will be introducing?
For, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, a bonding bill? The administration will have a bonding bill introduced. I'm not sure when that will be. I'm hoping it will be out soon. So we are working on language with the Department of Finance.
So, okay. All right. Which communities, I didn't see in your list, which communities you would actually be removing homes and businesses in? Which communities are those?
Madam Chair, I'm going to bring down Kent Locksmo. I told him this is right here because I knew this was going to happen. So
we did do some touring of flood damaged areas, or at least I had an opportunity to do that, and I don't recall which communities, perhaps Austin, if you could help us out here.
Madam Chair, members, Kent Locksmo, Director of the Division of Water. Basically, in each of these communities for the projects, there's some acquisition and removal of homes just to make room for the specific project. But other than that, just in acquisitions, the City of Moorhead has just made an application to remove, I think, 12 homes that are in the floodplain, and some have had repetitive flood losses. Old Court Township, which is a levee project, there recently all the money has been going for acquisition of homes that have been flooded or are in the way of the levee.
Help me out here. I don't know where Oak Court.
That's the suburb that, or the township that's just on the north side of Moorhead, Madam Chair.
And that is for removal?
The acquisition and removal of residential structures.
So that isn't for, with my recollection when we were up there, that they were just asking for a dike. So that's not for diking there, that's for the removal.
Madam Chair, it is for a dike. Basically, they wanted to put a ring levee around the developed area of that township. But so far, we've had funding for them for the last couple of years, and that's gone for us. There are some homes that are going to be on the west side of the dike. And so we're acquiring and removing those homes. And there's also homes that are in the way of the dike. So those have been acquired. It's the right-of-way acquisition.
Madam Chair, Mr. Locksmo, under the flood hazard mitigation grants, is Austin included in that?
Madam Chair, yes.
That included for just a follow-up for removing homes and businesses in Austin?
Madam Chair, Austin's probably removed close to 200 homes over the last decade, and I think they're about done with that. And this is the project now has been a pumping station and some walls and levees throughout the downtown area to protect that.
And, yes, Representative Hanson, if you would.
Madam Chair, I think we toured that site with the Capital Investment Committee, and so there was kind of the lake, or there was the river, and it was on right near the downtown building, a dike. Is that, and how much was that project?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanson, their total request, I believe, was a little over $5 million.
Madam Chair, was there a local match with that?
Yes, and Madam Chair, Representative Hanson, the local match there is a 50% match. And typically, there's been this 2% language that's allowed some limitations. Austin's 2% number is about $7 million, so they'd have to spend over, have a project that would amount to over that before they even qualify. So they end up paying 50% for the project cost. So their total project cost is around $10 million because they're asking us for $5
million. Madam Chair, Mr. Lacusmo, we also toured some of the upstream drainage systems that flow into Austin and saw about needs for reconversion of wetlands, maybe some holding areas to slow down the flow. Is there anything like that in the DNR proposal?
Madam Chair, Representative Hammond, in the past bonding bill, there's been some money that's gone to that watershed district to look at the project. The current request does not include any of those impoundments or wetlands restoration.
That was an interesting question, Representative Hansen. Without further impoundments, the testimony down there was no way to build dikes to keep the city from flooding. I mean, it would always flood. Just wouldn't flood as much. When your diking project is, you know, if you're funded, when would your diking project down there be finished?
Madam Chair, in Austin, that's probably several bienniums out because there's at the $15 million level, it's going to get full funding, so it will take several cycles to get that project completed.
So you're saying 4 to 6 years before that would happen?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for members?
All right, Madam Chair, members, thank you. I'm going to have Kent sit right up here because the next two might have questions on as well. So, next category in health and safety is dam repair, reconstruction, and removal. Currently, there's over 800 public dams in the state. Most of them are over 50 years old and require ongoing repairs. Removal of unsafe or obsolete dams can help ensure safety, provide fish passage, and restore health to our systems. You can see in this picture the top slide is the Cannon Falls dam site before the dam was removed and what it looks like now, which does provide significant benefits. What we're requesting here is $2 million. These funds will go for the removal, modification, repair, and engineering of projects at 7 high-priority public dams. You can see the outcomes: increase public safety, water quality, provide recreation opportunities, fish and wildlife habitats. Top 7 priority projects on the statewide dam safety project list include 2 dam removals, 2 dam modifications, 1 dam repair, and 2 dam engineering projects. Lake Bronson is our top priority. $400,000 would be used for engineering of that project to get us underway. Kings Mill in Rice County, Clayton Lake in Pine County, Windham in Cottonwood County, Cross Lake in Pine County, Hartley in St. Louis County, and Laverne in Rock County. Projects are determined by dam safety inspections, readiness of local project sponsors, and other factors. Next category, just quickly, a critical trend that I know you are aware of, dealing with sustainable water use. The top graph shows how water use is increasing over time. If you look at 87 and 88, those early peaks are due to severe drought. Then you go to 2000, approximately since 2000, our water consumption regularly exceeds those peaks in water use on a yearly basis. And then the bottom is just a hydrograph that shows that seasonal responses of the Mount Simon, Hinckley Aquifer, and Shakopee, and the general decline in water level of this aquifer over time. What we're requesting is $1 million to help expand our groundwater monitoring and observation well system. This will provide construction of 10 to 15 new wells in the expanded Twin Cities metro area and several new monitoring locations in the south central region of the state, and also help us to identify and seal existing monitoring wells that are obsolete. Just a quick note that the difference between this and the funding we did receive in the LCCMR bill that's moving forward, the LCCMR project is focused only in south central Minnesota. Of that, $700,000 would be recommended to be allocated to the Geological Survey for Atlases, and $900,000 would be allocated to the DNR to investigate the physical and recharge characteristics of the Mount Simon Aquifer.
On this, you knew I was going to have a question on the groundwater monitoring. This was inevitable. Looking at the use of water, and I'm going to concentrate on the Mount Simon Hinckley. You're asking for 10 to 15 wells. What is the optimum number of wells you need in for this aquifer, additional wells?
Madam Chair, just for the Mount Sinai Hinkley?
Mm-hmm.
When we asked staff for a comprehensive network, there's a lot of confusion over optimum and different definitions of what that means.
Well, adequate, how's that?
I have to go back and look to see, because I don't recall a number broken out by aquifer. We looked at a total statewide system, and the number, looking at it by several different ways, was an additional 6,000 wells. Now, obviously, those aren't all in the Mount Simon and Hinkley, because that's, from the cities down to it's in the southeast corner of the state, so it's not that. The issue with the Mount Simon Hinkley is it's a very deep aquifer and there are very expensive observation wells to put in.
Mm-hmm.
I expect the deep well would be $50,000 to $100,000. So it's not something that we can typically put in very easily with the large capital investment. But I'll get the number for East Aquifer specifically.
Yes, well, I think that since you are requesting money specifically for that aquifer right now, it would be helpful to know what we need to do in the end. I mean, how far does this get us? Does this get us 10% or 50%? Looking at the number of 6,000 statewide additional wells needed to check on our groundwater, this is going to be a bigger number. 6,000, what's the total cost for us over time to get this adequate monitoring of our drinking water sources?
A very rough estimate, Madam Chairman, was $120
million. $120
million.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, the request that we have is actually for 10 to 15 sites. We're looking at Mount Simon in each of those. But at each site, we'd be putting in multiple observation wells because there's a layer of aquifers and you would be measuring them each of those aquifers,
mm-hmm.
the Mount Simon being the deepest.
Okay. So, even so, over time, we need $120 million for monitoring our drinking water sources. And this year, you're asking for $1 million. So, yes, Representative Scalzi and then Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just had a question. I know I heard the words LCCMR, and maybe you could just repeat what LCCMR is, what the plan is for using those funds, and then given what the Governor said yesterday about LCCMR possibly, the funds being used to purchase the acres on Lake Vermilion, what would be your fallback position if you didn't have those? From the LCCMR.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, I'll answer the first one, and then I need a little clarification on the second part of that statement. As I mentioned, groundwater monitoring observation wells was recommended from the Commission to be funded at $1.6 million. That project focused only in south central Minnesota. $700,000 of that currently would be allocated to the Minnesota Geological Survey for Atlas work. $900,000 would be allocated to the DNR to investigate the physical and recharge characteristics of the Mount Simon aquifer in that area. Kent, I don't know if you have anything to add.
Madam Chairman, Representative Scalzi, in the LCCMR discussions, there was a desire to move towards actually doing an atlas. Our initial proposal was to do more of the investigation and the data gathering, and through that process, there was more money committed to the Minnesota Geological Survey so they could start on county atlases in three of the counties right around Mankato. So it will be development of the base level information for county atlas, and that's an area of the state of South Central where there was a real lack of data. So this is providing more of the geologic data and hydrologic data that we need.
Perhaps it would be helpful. Sometime we're going to have a hearing on this, the overall picture, but describe briefly for the committee the three steps you need to know, take, in order to know how much water you really have and how fast you're using it.
Madam Chairman, to determine how much water you need to know, you have to have a good understanding of the geology first, so you understand which are the water-bearing formations and where and the extent of those formations. Then we do, and that's the first step in a county atlas. Then you look at the hydrologic characteristics of that, and through an atlas process, we do age dating of the water. We look at information from all of the known well drilling information to see where water exists and to get an idea of where the water is and which direction it may be flowing, if this is groundwater we're speaking of. And then the third step would be to actually do pumping tests and determine the capacity of the system and the eventual yield of the system. What isn't done is, to a great extent in any of these studies, is looking at the recharge of the of those aquifers. And there have been general recharge studies done, so we know how much water is recharging the superficial or the top aquifer. But that's a lot more complicated as you go deeper into the deeper aquifers. You do get an idea of that based on the age of the water that is in those aquifers, and that age is different depending on whether you're at the periphery of the aquifers or in the deep central portion of those aquifers.
You estimated, I don't know that I've heard an estimate of cost to do this, what we need to do statewide. Is there an estimate?
Madam Chair, do you mean an estimate to complete county atlases for the state? Or
for, to do the initial monitoring or checking, the atlases and then the long-term monitoring?
Madam Chair, we don't have an estimate broken out for that.
I think that would be helpful for us to have an understanding. You have a note at the bottom that says 2/3 of public water supply comes from groundwater sources. Does that include private wells, or that I think it doesn't. Is that right? It's like 3/4 if you're looking at private and public.
Madam Chair, you're correct.
Okay, and that's that we're looking at what 3/4 of what Minnesotans drink, and we have no idea what's going on. It's kind of scary. But I think we will do some further work. Representative Gardner has a subcommittee here, but I think the full committee needs to hear some of the things that they have talked about. Do you want to go on?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, I think, had a second part of that question. Okay. I just wanted some clarification.
Okay, and Representative McNamara, you have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Meyer, there was some talk yesterday in the Governor's State of the State message regarding using LCCMR to funds to purchase the acreage on Lake Vermilion for a new state park. And my question is, and I don't know how much that would be and how much of the LCCMR funds that would be, but I'm just wondering what your fallback position is then for your anticipating $1.6 million for the South Central Minnesota Atlas project. Would that project then stop, or if the funds were gone, or how would you handle that? Because there's a little bit of discussion about those funds being used to purchase the Lake Vermilion acreage.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, I was going to discuss this at the park slide, but I can talk about it briefly here, and we can continue at that point. The Governor's budget bonding recommendations does contain dollars for the purchase acquisition of Lake Vermilion State Park, the United States Steel property on Lake Vermilion. There is a zero, it's a placeholder, and it's recommended using the funds from the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund to pay, to be a revenue stream for, like, a revenue bond, basically. We would seek statutory authority to do long-term payments out of the trust fund. This year they had a little bit of about $23 million to spend. In the coming years they have 28. But in the next 17 years, the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund will be providing about $800 million worth of revenues from estimates that I've seen. We've been working with the Attorney General and Bond Council to make sure that it is legal and that you can do it, which every indication we have is so. What we're recommending is once we come up with that price, we evaluate the proposal, and you folks will have to make a decision whether that should be done or not, and find the money in the LCCMR recommendations to fund the acquisition, to fund those bond payments. We initially had a proposal that we submitted to the commission to use the trust fund dollars for what we called outdoor access for Minnesotans. We're looking for precedent setting $97.5 million to fund all of our outdoor recreation acquisitions. The initial payments of that would have been between $6 and $7 million a year. That went on for 20 years. Depending on what the price of the park will be, you know, that was for all of our acquisitions. It will be less than that for whatever the proposal will be, but as soon as we get a price and those negotiations are completed, we will be working with you and letting you know what that is. The task force report for the group that we had established up there is online, and I can make sure that you guys get a copy of that to see what the group, the local citizens, the counties, the townships recommend for the future of that area and that park as well. That's really, Madam Chair, that's about all the information I can give you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm
sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, Mr. Lacco, if you could tell me what kind of a well do we drill for $50,000 or $100,000? And the second question would be, are all the wells throughout Minnesota of any value to use in monitoring? Do we have access to records when they have to go deeper? Or can any existing regular wells be used for any kind of monitoring purposes?
Madam Chairman, Representative McNamara, to your first part of your question, it's a very deep well. Essentially, you pay by the foot, and to get that deep, you have to start out with a bigger diameter. Yeah, and they're like 800 feet deep for a Mount Simon. So that's what drives up the cost. And yes, we use other wells. You typically don't want to use a production well where you're seeing a cone of depression and a drawdown at that well to measure ambient water levels. You could use them in the off season, like for an irrigation well. And we have, when wells become available, we have records of all the wells drilled, and they're provided to the health department, and that data is shared between agencies. So we know what they drilled through and that information, and that's valuable. That's actually the first step in our County Atlas program, is doing a county well index and gathering all of that data. So we do look at that. When there are wells that are being abandoned, and we have used this on some of the Mount Simon wells, when they're abandoned and sealed, they're filled with concrete basically, and there's a process you can put wires in and transducers into the aquifer, so you can still seal the well and get data as long as those wires last. So we have done that, and we can do that on a well that's being abandoned for around $5,000. So we have done that in some instances, and we try to max that as wells are being converted. We try to accept as many as we can in the system.
Madam Chair members, thank you. Just to summarize the health and safety components here, you know, reducing flood damage to the protection of healthy watersheds, making sure that our dams are safe and sound, and also making sure that we have improved groundwater level monitoring to inform effective planning and conservation of the state's water supply. The next major category, as I talked about in my introductory remarks, deals with conservation. And really, it's really exciting to see what's taking place with the conservation side. I talked a little bit about the carbon sequestration, but also our ability to utilize and leverage the state's bonding dollars to make sure that our lands are being conserved, that we are protecting what we can in these areas, and trying to deal with the ever-increasing demand of commodity production. So just a critical trend that we've talked about in the past, landscape change, both historic and ongoing, results in the loss of habitat and fragmentation. You can see today, oak savanna covers less than 1% of its original extent in the state. Old growth forest covers less than 4%. And less than 10% of the wetlands remain in Minnesota's prairie pothole region. And less than 1% of its native grasslands still survive. This slide just shows urban and residential development. Nearly every day, 60 acres of undeveloped land in the greater metropolitan area is converted to other land uses. And it's estimated that by the year 2030, over 1 million new residents and nearly 500,000 new homes will be built in the 11 county metropolitan area. Preserving and protecting what kind of open space we can, not only in the metropolitan area, but throughout the state, is very important. Critical trend that we touched upon is just the climate change. What we're learning right now, what's going on, it's an overarching driver of what we're dealing with as a department. DNR is taking a key role in helping to achieve the legislature's goals of reducing emissions from greenhouse gases through the sequestering, planting, and capturing of those gases and protecting the state's land and water as well. Climate change also has negative impacts that affect other drivers on natural resources. The frequency and intensity of wildfires. Last year we had a very, very expensive firefighting season, $20+ million. The spread of exotic and invasive species, and also the increase in disease and pests are just some of the impacts that we're facing. Our role, as we talked about, carbon sequestration through land conservation and best management practices, providing those multiple benefits, water quality, conservation, habitat, and sequestration, and greenhouse gas reduction. We're also working as a department to reduce our operations. We have over 181 buildings. You're going to see some legislation this session to help us deal with management of those facilities. We also drive a lot of miles. We're trying to reduce those miles, look at our fleet, make sure our fleet is the most effective, gas-efficient fleet that we can have. Also look at teleconferencing and other ideas that we have, options just to reduce the amount of miles that we travel. First program in this category is Native Prairie Conservation Protection. I know you've seen this slide before. The yellow bar shows the estimated 150,000 acres remaining. The green bar there shows the 66,000 acres that are protected by the DNR. And basically the Nature Conservancy has a lot of acres in prairie land right now. Over 70% of the native prairie in the state is privately owned. And the threat of commodity prices and production is just knocking on their door to turn that soil over. So we need to really work on this issue. Our 10-year goal is to enroll 20 to 30,000 acres of native prairie and prairie bank easements and designated natural areas. You can see that goal for the prairie bank on this slide is 75,000 acres. The outcomes for this request, we're requesting $3 million to provide investments in native prairie conservation to protect the most endangered habitats. Approximately 1,000 acres of intact prairie would be acquired as conservation easements on private lands. And just a note, those easements are perpetual to date. We do have the ability to purchase time-sensitive easements, but we haven't found the need to do that yet. We always strive to get perpetual easements wherever possible, and fortunately today the people we work with are willing to do that. So $1.5 million would give us approximately 1,000 acres in conservation easements. $1.3 million of the $3 million will help us to acquire 300 acres of prairie land SNAs, the scientific and natural areas. And then we're requesting about 200,000 of this to help increase our harvest and planting of local native prairie seeds that we've begun several years ago. But that would be a 20% increase in our capabilities to do that. Potential project locations include Upper Minnesota River Valley, the Shinabri Creek area in Murray County, southwestern coastal prairies, Glacier Lake Agassiz Beach Ridges, Alexandria Moraine, and the Aspen Prairie Parklands in northwestern Minnesota. Moving on to SNA acquisition.
Excuse me for a moment. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Meyer, you talked about bioenergy development there. Is it your intent, are you looking just at feedstock to be available for bioenergy, or are you actually talking about feedstock for bioenergy?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanson, thank you very much for bringing that up. Part of it is both, actually. We're looking at the ability for us on lands that are sustainable of harvesting to actually harvest biofuel feed sources or feedstock sources. It is a great management tool for us rather than burn, which is causing more greenhouse gas opportunities. We want to be able to harvest those materials and get them to a source that will be able to use them as a biofuel, not only on our SNAs, but our WMAs, our forest lands, anywhere we can. It provides us a cost-effective management opportunity for restoration. But there are unique and just scientific areas that we can't do that on. If there's any seed collection on some of these pristine native areas, it's going to be done by hand. We will go back to those natural disturbance management methods on those areas that we have. So it's again, using a blend to make sure we manage what we can in the most appropriate way possible.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, has there been any... I think there are two plants, cellulosic plants, that are looking at starting or beginning construction. have you an inventory of WMAs or SMAs or Native Prairie properties that you own or have the easements on in proximity to those plants, or are you aware of those two plants?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, we are aware. We are conducting an inventory of all state lands. Our Parks Division has done a tremendous job, and I think the Chair has seen some of that work, at inventorying where our Native Prairie, our prairie, our biofuel opportunities are, and we're working with local end markets to make sure that we're participating with them. It's a high demand, very high quality product that people are looking for that we're able to provide. We could provide more detailed information if you desire as well. Thank you. Moving on, S&A acquisition, scientific and natural area acquisition, we're requesting $1 million. Now this is different from the S&A acquisition on the prairie land. The priority on this proposal is really the rare forest, woodland, fen, and peatland communities, designate some of those as SNAs, and 2 to 6 high priority areas. Focus on the forest, woodland, and fen areas are going to be the priority areas: Avon Hills, Forest Scientific and Natural Area Additions of Kern County, Big Woods of Cotton River County, Clinton Falls, Dwarf Trout Lily Sites in Steele County, Cook Lake Forest, Otter Tail and Benton Counties, Des Moines River Forest Prairie Complex in Jackson, Franconia Bluffs in Chicago, the Hovland Woods Edition, Lester Lake Forest up in Hubbard County, Morton Outcrop, Milton Unconformity in St. Louis County, Pine Bend Bluffs S&A Edition, and Wyckoff Balsam Fir S&A Edition as well. So we're working with the local landowners and also the county board and local units of government to make sure that you understand our goals, and we're working cooperatively with them to do those acquisitions.
But just before you go on this one, I don't recall what your original request to the governor was in this area.
Madam Chair, I don't have that list in front of me. I want to say $3 million.
Thank you.
Moving on, wildlife management area acquisition and improvement. This is one that we do want to thank the legislature for all their strong support in the past bonding years. It is going to provide us with the opportunity to ensure that we do have a significant level of habitat and conservation lands in the state for people to use, but we need to deal with that more. Currently, we have over 1,400 WMAs that provide 1.2 million acres of public land and hunting, and also great conservation opportunities. They're critical in protecting important fish and wildlife habitat. I know you've seen and have heard the Citizens Advisory Committee that recommended accelerated acquisition of priority habitat within the next 10 years. That has been responsible for the large success of this program in the past two bonding cycles. So this is one of our largest, if not the largest, opportunity on a per acre basis for the DNR, sequestering carbon involving the reestablishing of wetlands and perennial vegetation on cultivated lands, which is a key focus of this program. Purchasing those lower quality lands and making sure they're replanted, they're restored to provide the quality habitat, the water quality, the conservation benefits that are out there. This is a slide you saw last section, our Working Lands Initiative, but just an example on how we're working on this. This picture illustrates a 4 foot, I'm sorry.
Before you go ahead, we have a question, and I think it's easier to get a few questions as we go on this.
Thank you. It's okay, yeah.
Mr. Meyer, can you just real quickly tell us how much of the money we spent from the 05 and 06 WMA acquisition money? Or it's in the process of...
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, the 05 has received $10 million for acquisition and $600,000 in development dollars, parking lots, things like that, signs. 06 has received $14 million. Most of those dollars are expended or encumbered to date. I don't believe there's a large balance in there at all. It's our intention that before the end of this fiscal year, all of those dollars will be expended.
Okay.
And if you could follow...
You're going to ask the question I was going to ask.
Well, I don't know. How much of that was in acquisition and how much of that for the 06 is in easement?
Madam Chair, members, this program is an acquisition program only.
Acquisition only. Okay, thank you.
Title acquisition.
Madam Chair, a follow-up, if I could ask the Deputy Commissioner to get to you exactly where we are in that, in a breakdown and of the availability for to kind of lay out a roadmap of how you'd be able to use going forward, what the opportunities are, and just a little more detail if we could, because I think our interest groups like to hear about that and how successful it is and how terrific of a program and the kind of lands. If you could give us a little more information, because sometimes I do get asked the question, well, $24 million in 2 years, how could you possibly spend that? And I think you have numerous opportunities beyond that amount of money, and I just would like to have a little more information, if we could.
I'm sure we all would.
Madam Chair, Representative, not a problem. The numbers I have that we purchased, I don't have the total dollar amount, but 2005 we purchased over 4,000 acres, and 2006 over 4,500 acres alone. So I can get you the dollar, those dollars associated with those acquisitions as well.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Meyer, in the WMA request, are you looking at part of that going to Butler property purchase in Dakota County, or is that anywhere in your list?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, we were just recently made aware of their willingness now to finally sell. We haven't begun those discussions on where that fits in our priorities, but I can get back to you on that if possible.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Well, Mr. Meyer, we've actually at least substantially funded part of that, so it certainly is a priority of the DNR. I just want to clarify that. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the state. We're not going to let the DNR let it slip by. Representative Hansen and I will both be working from different sides of the room to make this happen.
Madam Chair,
and so will Representative Osman and Wagenius too.
We do appreciate that, and I did not mean it was not a priority. What I wanted to focus on there is we just recently learned that they're willing to finally sell it at an agreed to price. We have been working for years on that property with other stakeholders as well. So I will get back to you as how we may be able to put a funding package together with your help to do that. Thank you. It's a working land slide. It shows how we focus on 4 to 9 mile square areas. This slide has 15% in public wildlife management areas, 85% in private lands, 51% in ag cropland production. It's the way we need to continue to work and work into the future as the farming economy continues to boom and the demand to put more production on the ground is there. We need to make sure we're working in conjunction with federal programs, local programs, and willing private landowners just to maximize our benefits and our dollars. The expected outcomes quickly off the $10 million request, acquisition of 3,400 acres of WMA through direct purchase. This will most likely leverage another 3,400 acres acquired through key partnerships, through conservation groups and programs, and just enhance the quality through restoration of newly acquired WMAs. And also, the critical component of that, one of the critical components is just the public access opportunity as more and more land is put on the private tax rolls. Our reinvesting Minnesota or critical habitat tax program, the license plates that you're also familiar with, we're looking for some dollars to help match those private donations. Since 1986, we've received $42.5 million. In private donations equating to 77,000 acres and over 4,500 acres of habitat enhanced. Currently, our pledged and approved donations exceed the state's available matching dollars by more than $5.8 million. We generate about $3 to $3.5 million annually off our license plate program, but the donations we receive continue to exceed that. And I'm always impressed about what we receive. There's several other large program matches within the 11 county metropolitan area that we're anticipating that we'll need to match off of these funds as well. And I know I did provide you, Madam Chair, with a list I wish I had for the committee of those unmatched critical habitat pledges that are there. If anybody needs that list, I can provide that list to the committee if you did not receive that as well. The next slide just shows the funding history. What we would like to do with these is acquire 2,000 additional acres or match dollars that would give us 2,000 additional acres. area in red shows the unmatched private donations, and those shortfalls in the program just result in the potential loss of key conservation opportunities.
Representative Scalzi has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Deputy Commissioner. I think in your opening remarks you talked about RIM is going to lose 100,000 acres. Maybe you could remember that and correct me if I'm wrong. 100,000 acres with land put back into production, was that for this year? And if that's true and we move into the next generation of energy, I'm wondering if the $3 million is adequate at this time.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, I was referring to the Conservation Reserve Program, which some of those lands are involved in RIM and other conservation programs. In 2008, we're estimating to lose between 100 to 120,000 acres in the state. By 2010, nearly 600,000 acres that are enrolled currently in CRP will expire. And the issue we have is the commodity payments you can make far exceed the amount of those actual tax payments to keep them in the program. So we're working with our federal delegation on the Farm Bill to make sure that we can come up with some programs that will at least be adequate to help farmers keep these lands in these programs, and also looking at new and emerging opportunities such as you'll hear from Bowser, I'm assuming, on RIM critical energy and how that might be a component to keep these lands in the program as well. The $3 million is just a piece of what we're looking for all of our acquisitions that will help us keep lands basically in conservation habitat. Most of our programs are actual acquisition programs, though. We don't deal with a lot of easements. Forest Legacy is our largest easement program by far. We have some stream bank trout easements that we work on as well, but for land conservation, we try to work with the acquisition side of things.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Water control structures are requested for approximately $400,000 or $500,000 to help replace some of the high priority water control structures on our shallow lakes that we manage. Most of these lakes are managed for waterfowl production, rice harvesting, for example. And we need to maintain these structures to help us maintain and improve the habitat and water quality on about 13,000 acres of land. They're really important to helping us provide key waterfowl habitat and improving that water quality, drain downs, manipulating, making sure that water level is where it should be, is what this program is all about. And I can tell you where we're looking at putting those. Proposed projects include Eagle Lake in Blue Earth County, Hurricane Lake Wildlife Management Area in Cottonwood County, Rice Lake, Cottonwood Lake, Chetek Wildlife Management Area, Whitewater WMA, Grayling Marsh WMA in Aiken County, Sedan Pond WMA in Polk County, Pelican Lake, Lake Christina, and others as well. Just another critical trend that I know you're well aware of that we're dealing with, shoreline development. Increasing development degrades water quality, diminishes fish and wildlife populations, and does limit recreational opportunities. The median number of homes on lakeshore miles today has grown from less than 3 in 1950 to more than 16 currently. Protecting and maintaining our state's waters is everybody's responsibility, but we work collaboratively with many partners, educating lakeshore property owners, monitoring water quality, and working with farmers to preserve high-quality wetland complexes.
Representative
McNamara
has a question.
Mr. Meyer, yes. Thank you. In the top right photo, and I'm assuming I see a number of your fellow DNR people in the audience, I'm wondering if one of them is the third house from the right with the development on that shoreline. Would that be legal to do that way today?
I'm not sure about the dock.
I'm not worried about the dock, Deputy Commissioner.
You know,
we got bigger problems than the dock. Why do we care about that guy's dock? Look what he's done to the shore.
Yeah.
And it's hard to see what that looks like, a retaining wall there. Let's catch that up.
Well, Madam Chair,
some of it may be. Some of it may have been done by a variance. I think Kent's a little bit more familiar with this photo, or he may be. It's up in the Brainerd Lake area.
Well, it could be anywhere. Madam Chair, I'm not going to belabor it. That's what we should be worried about. The one below it is a classic. And I just, the one below it, I won't even concentrate on the top one because it's hard to see, but I hope it's not legal today. The one below it, I would just like to know if that is legal to be doing it that way today compared to their neighbor.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, the current ordinances require cutting vegetation removal approvals from local government. So whether or not that specific lot there passed and received that, or if there was just some significant vegetation removal, I guess I can't answer that. But the ordinances that local governments have do have provisions to limit the amount of vegetation removal, trees, and not to, and, you know, recently we're looking at other types of protect your shore and have different types of vegetation near the water's edge instead of sod.
Representative Magner, I think this is a good time to ask how they're doing on their shoreline.
I was just going to
Well, Madam Chair, I think I know how they're doing. Look at the screen. No, I'm sorry.
Representative Magner has a good eye, and I, you can answer.
I'm going to let it go, Madam Chair.
But I'm not.
I'm fine.
So you can talk to us about your progress on shoreline rules, because we can never purchase all of the lake tour in a state that needs to be protected. That's just not...
Madam Chair, the last session there was a requirement that we commence shoreline rulemaking, and we've done that. We're creating in the process of creating advisory committees, and we're looking at the statewide issues relating to shoreline management. So that's moving forward. We've we've got three staff committed to working with local governments, and we've had a number of meetings with local governments to commence and move that process forward.
Yes, but what's your outcome that date for us to actually have proposed rules in the state register?
Proposed rules in the state register, Madam Chair, would be about a year out. From now?
A year out.
Yes.
We'll remember that.
All right, moving forward. This program, again, is titled A Permanent Easements on Lakes and Streams to be Protected as Aquatic Management Areas. Currently, 834 shoreline miles are protected. And we recently have completed, and you may be hearing from a Citizens Advisory Committee that has conducted an evaluation with some recommendations. They recommend the acquisition of 1,750 miles of AMA shoreline within the next 10 years. Currently, this request contains $1.5 million that would be for the acquisition and protection of 6.5 miles of lake and stream shoreline habitat, provide increased access and leveraging investments through strategic partnerships. Priority is given to shoreline with the highest habitat quality, designated trout streams, strong partnerships, and willing sellers. So just a little clarification, the 6.5 miles would include 5 miles of trout stream and 1.5 miles of lake and warm water stream shoreline protection. And if just quickly on this slide, you can see existing WMAs. This is the Dead River Walk Area AMA that we acquired in 2007. The green was existing. The red, fee title acquisition and a conservation easement, permanent conservation easement on the remaining shoreline there. It will protect that shoreline from future development, which will occur on the road side of that property, and provide to make sure that when people do access that water body, they're doing so in a friendly manner. The next program that we have is fish hatchery improvements. We're requesting $1 million. The DNR has 17 fish hatchery facilities statewide. These include 5 cold water hatcheries that meet our current demand for stocked lake trout, brook trout, brown trout, flake, and rainbow trout. In addition, we have 12 warm water hatcheries that provide walleye, northern pike, muskellunge, and catfish. approximately 1,300 lakes and 125 streams are stocked with fish raised at these facilities. The $1 million would help us to maintain and improve our fish hatchery facilities to keep production at peak efficiency and protect existing investments. In addition, we're looking for a part of this acquisition or this proposal to help us begin land acquisition and production of design documents for construction of drainable ponds so that we're raising walleyes out of the wetlands but in drainable ponds that would be man-made ponds, basically. This will be an expensive proposition. Our next phase of this after this bonding cycle would be to come back to the next bonding cycle and request probably several million dollars to construct the ponds. It's estimated to get us into about six or eight ponds, it'll cost between $3 and $4 million. State of Arkansas received a $50 million federal appropriation to move their entire aquaculture industry into man-made ponds, and it's that kind of investment that will be needed to get not only the DNR but other aquaculture industry participants into man-made ponds as well.
The figure you just put out, that which state?
Arkansas.
Got how much money?
$50 million from the federal appropriation.
Have we ever requested that?
Not yet, Madam Chair.
Is that on our agenda?
Hopefully, once we get through the design documentation, we'll have better information to prepare those requests.
Congratulations to Arkansas. They are so far ahead of us.
I think you need to congratulate Trent Mott, probably more than Arkansas. But it really is done. And some of the problems we have there is now they're raising Asian carp, they're raising grass carp, they're raising invasive species that do have the potential to be imported to our state, which is why you will see a bill helping give the DNR more control over the importation of minerals and water into the state so we can protect our waters from the VHF threat, which is real and just around the corner.
I think you'll probably find some receptive legislators for proposals like that.
Thank you. Moving forward. Forest ownership, we talked a little bit about this. This slide just shows the changing forest ownership patterns. I'm pleased to say that the brown on the lower part of that slide is part of the newly acquired Forest Capital Partners Forest Legacy Program. 51,000 acres was recently signed into permanent protection to the Forest Legacy Partnership. And the lighter color brown on the top of that slide, I guess it's a little bit lighter, is Forest Capital Partners 2, what we're currently working on and want to try to acquire with this bonding proposal. The outcome we're looking for is $9 million to protect 40 to 80,000 acres of private forest lands throughout the state using easements or acquisition by fee title, gift, or donation. One of the things we're exploring right now is that if easement is going to be 95% or close to the process of fee title acquisition, perhaps we need to have the ability to have that in our toolkit as well, to just do the fee title acquisition, work with the counties to make sure that that's done in a way that's acceptable to them. We just recently have completed and are in the process of getting to you a copy of a stakeholders group called Minnesota's Forest for the Future. And I'm just going to have this handed out here. We have a bill we're working on as well that will establish the forest legacy easements in statute, similar to conservation easements in Chapter 84C. We've been working with the stakeholder group you'll see in here. The Deer Hunters Association, Grand Rapids Chamber of Commerce, Forest Industries Association, St. Louis County Nature Conservancy, Coochin County, our staff, Trust of Public Land, and also some other user groups to help us really hone in on some of the questions we've been hearing about this program throughout the legislative process. So I look forward to going through this report in more detail and reviewing that legislation with you as soon as it comes in. As I mentioned, we're looking for $9 million for this request, and that will be to maintain working forests and ensure timber supply and forest industry jobs, public access, and maintain the conservation benefits as well. Another key project or key component of this is that traditional recreation access. We had a situation several years ago where an individual purchased some of these parcel-wise lands from a timber company, and it forced us to have to shut down a snowmobile trail until we could reroute that because the state trail went right through that individual's land, and he did not want that going through there. So we need to make sure that as we do this, we're preserving those traditional access routes and making sure that they are existing and kept, because they are so important to all of us. State land reforestation. This is an important program that, once again, we're seeking funding for. $3 million would provide stable and healthy fish wildlife populations, make sure that the natural lands are protected, and also make sure that our forests are sustainably managed and provide a diversity of benefits. What we're looking at is approximately to reforest 8,000 acres for reforestation, and then plant and seed 12,000 acres of state forest land. Just briefly here, currently approximately one-third of the state land that's harvested each year is planted or seeded. Reforestation back to native conifer forest, for example. In the future, we anticipate more than 15,000 acres will be reforested by planting or seeding, rather than the regeneration that occurs naturally, such as aspen and things like that. We're more interested in getting back to the trees that were naturally occurring and naturally growing on the land, and oftentimes that requires a more labor-intensive workforce, or we have to prepare the area, or sometimes we have to remove some of the species that are there currently to get them back into not their pre-settlement forest, but the forests that are more traditional and are better biologically suited for those sites. And that does cost money. It's also a great investment for the future of our state, because those dollars are coming back to us at some time through our timber sales, through our public land, trust land, whatever that may be, consolidated conservation lands goes to the counties, things like that. Just summarizing our conservation agenda for this subject, stable and healthy fish and wildlife populations are supported by healthy quality habitat. Natural lands and waters are protected and restored. Our forests are sustainably managed to provide a diversity of benefits, and the strong conservation partnerships and the strong stewardship ethic is maintained and increased in the state. This next category we've talked about in depth at a committee hearing previously on the outdoor recreation. We talked about our state parks, bonding and operations, and also trails. So I'm going to kind of go through this rather quickly, but any questions, please ask them as I go through. A slide that we've shown, I talked about briefly, this is user participation index of outdoor recreation use by hours. And as I mentioned, for the first time, young adults are not participating as much as their elders in the outdoors. This group that traditionally was the highest is that 20 to 34-year-old bar, and you can see that's getting lower right now. And as these bars move or get older, the demands and the expectations of our outdoor recreation system are going to change. We see it right now. Camper cabins, our campgrounds, people don't want to sleep in tents. They want either a primitive camping experience in a camper cabin, or we need to revamp our campground systems. They were designed in the 70s, most of them, when the top-of-the-line trailer was a probably 16-foot-long pop-up trailer, if that big. Now we have fifth-wheel trailers. We have other things people are looking for. And many of our parks, our campgrounds, aren't equipped for those opportunities yet. Bottom slide here just shows kind of a typical camping experience. Tents next to trailers. We're looking to create more camping tent areas, more trailer areas. Our park system, as you know, is 66 state parks, 7 rec areas, 8 waysides, and 54 state forest campgrounds. Strategic investments are required to address critical needs and meet the demands for high-quality outdoor experiences.
Let me just talk about critical trends and changing recreation use. And I understand that, but we've got a new critical trend that has been put upon us, and that's the extreme cost of gasoline. And I don't think there's any commentator that's saying that's going to change. So when we're pulling big things, folks are not going to be able to afford that to the extent that they were able to in the past. So are we looking at a clashing critical trend coming back this way? Have you all discussed that? And have you also discussed the carbon footprint of encouraging the movement of the biggest of the vehicles that you're talking about?
Madam Chair, members, as you talk about those demands, consumption and people's choices, we have no control over. There are people in the population who do live in the middle of the state who want to use their equipment and go camp at a state park on the North Shore. They expect certain requirements. We're going to make sure we aren't going to create large-scale RV pads, but we want to make sure we have the opportunity for people to use and to meet their expectations. Even at some of the most primitive boundary water sites or access boundary water sites, they have campgrounds that have RV pads that have these amenities that people are looking for, that we need to try to put at least some of them in our campground system. The carbon, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The issue here is that you have seen this critical trend going this way. All of a sudden we've got this new thing coming in that wasn't there two, three years ago, a very, very high cost of gasoline. And so how have you factored that in to your thinking about what we need to provide for folks? Will they change their behavior because of the high cost of gasoline? I mean, the Department of Transportation is suggesting a massive change in transportation because of a high cost of gasoline. And it doesn't seem like you all are looking at those Department of Transportation figures.
In the short term, Madam Chair, we have been looking, and we constantly look at our revenues that we receive in the park system. Last year, when we did have high fuel costs, our camping actually increased. Our usership in the park system is pretty stable. The same numbers year in, year out. We have the same people going there. People go there on an annual vacation. People go to the park system because they love it and they're going to go there. The use of how they get there is going to change probably. There will be, I would assume, a decline or some different thinking about how people use the amenities in the park. We will be evaluating the need for some of those facilities and making sure that we aren't taking advantage of going in the wrong direction as we develop the system again. The carbon footprint piece, really we're promoting opportunities throughout the state. We're promoting one tank trips. We're promoting these new parks that people don't use as much, that aren't frequented as much. So we are promoting some of that, and as you get into that, it's in this area, it's more the regional park system. I think that people will be looking for those experiences as well, and there's just not a lot of camping experiences in the metropolitan regional park system like we have in our state park system.
Representative Gilbert, just a question.
Well, I had something I wanted to say about what your question was and some of the discussion. This is not scientific, but the campgrounds, as an example, that are privately owned, are filled to capacity in my part of the state. And they are filled to capacity. People are now renting the campsites, the RV sites, for the season rather than by the week or month. And then they tow up a smaller car and they drive to and from Owatonna or Worthington or wherever that is in a smaller car and leave their vehicle behind. I think that the trend is that people are coming, if you take cabins and that type of thing, the trend is they come less, but they stay longer when they're there. That's how they're coping with the scenario that you brought forward. So I still see the need for the amenities. They're just being used, and the way that people approach using the outdoor recreation is changing in terms of how long they stay and how they get to and from. But as far as the size of the motorhomes, they're getting bigger, and people are buying them more frequently and more often. And a friend of mine who's in the RV business here in the Twin Cities is thriving.
I think as we see a recession, I mean, our state demographer has told us we're in a recession, and things are going to change. And I expect, actually, I would agree that more people are going to recreate at home in Minnesota. And so we need to provide for that. It's just a question of, with these more folks recreating here, my guess is a lot of those folks will not have the great big RV. A lot of those folks just won't be able to afford it. And so that's the part I was thinking about. Representative Meyer.
Madam Chair, on that point, Commissioner Meyer, with the Say Park rehabilitation, can you describe just how that works? I mean, if you hire contractors, if you get the bonding dollars, how quickly can you put people to work? Are you letting contracts, or is it in-house labor? What's the job creation piece here in the past and the project involved with State Park Rehabilitation?
Madam Chair, members, the DNR, just like any other state agency, is required under State Statute 15B to go through the administrative review process. We cannot begin to design. We don't have the revenues like some of the other entities do. The regional park system, for example, has the ability through their revenue stream to do pre-design and design so that when they get their dollars, they can build. We have to wait till we know we have dollars coming to us, then do the design work. There are projects such as road repair, building infrastructure repair needs that we can and we will get done immediately. But the design, pre-design, the steps that we need to go through are going to take some time, especially on the larger acquisition project. And I believe that's going to be true throughout the state. Transportation is probably a lot different, where you can go in and tear up a road, put a new foundation in, and put an overlay or whatever you're going to do on roads. But you're talking about building infrastructure. We have to do bids. There's a process through the Department of Administration that we must follow by the law that will delay some of these dollars getting in until next construction season. But we recognize the demands and the pressures that are out there, and we are committed to get as many of our dollars down into the local community, into the trades as possible this building season.
Mr. Meyer, when you said next construction season, does that mean this June or the following June?
Madam Chair, Representative Dill, on our larger projects that need design work, for example, say we don't have it in our buildings, but one of the things that you may hear would be a new visitor center somewhere, for example. Those are $1 million projects that take a lot of engineering, architectural, and site design work. None of that would be able to, no construction would be able to take place until that work is done. But our more construction, rehab, re-roofing, putting in new windows, more things of a more rehabilitation manner, we're committed to try to get done as soon as feasibly and legally possible. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm just going to try to get us through this as fast as we can. Our parks, I handed out a list for you guys to answer questions on our park rehab dollars. We're asking for $10 million. No acquisition dollars on the $10 million. It's all rehab and repair. You can see the parks and the projects that we have listed on that sheet. Water access sites, we continue. I think we just beat Michigan actually in the number of registered voters, so it's always amazing to me. If you ever want some good entertainment, you go to the boat ramp that first couple of days of the boating season, and it's pretty interesting to sit there in a lawn chair and watch people come in and out. But we have a lot of sites. We have 300 fishing piers that we need or we maintain with local government communities. We're requesting $1 million in this program to help with the acquisition and construction of newer expanded boat access sites, rehabilitation of sites, and construct two new fishing piers. The priorities that we have are for the large water sites or the large lakes right now. My project priority is located on the following lakes: Lake Darling, Nisswa Lake, Lake Vermilion Moccasin Point, Lake Minnetonka, and Lake Waconia. We're also going to rehab several existing sites to protect our investment and work with local communities to provide two new fishing piers, hopefully more. State Trail rehab, this is one we talked about extensively as well. This is a map of our system. And as you hear, I know you have, I don't know, it looks like 50 bills on your agenda for trails in the coming days. The continuous and steady trend upward in the number of legislatively mandated and authorized trail miles, state trail miles, continues to put a funding gap on our trail operation needs and system. Currently, the funding gap is $6 million that we have in maintenance of the trail system right now. Our proposal under this package is for $3 million for rehab and repair. We need to focus on some of our bridges that are out there. We have 295 bridges in the state trail system. More than 100 of them are over 100 years old or 100 years old. So we need to rehabilitate 11 high priority bridges and resurface 13 miles of trail, hopefully. These bridges aren't going to fall down. People aren't driving cars on them. but they are in need of repair, and we do need to get them fixed. Lake Vermilion State Park, we talked a little bit about the funding proposal that is out there using the trust fund dollars to pay for revenue bonds. We are continuing our negotiation process. We have submitted our appraisal to United States Steel. We're waiting for them to review that and comment back to us. Under the Land Owner's Bill of Rights, that information is private, so we cannot share that with you. But you will be the first group of people to know what that number is as soon as it is negotiated out. And it is our hope that it will be done before the supplemental budget comes out, and it's before the, well, it needs to be done before the bonding goes successfully. Just quickly, our conservation agenda dealing with outdoor recreation, make sure that we maintain our high quality and diverse outdoor recreation system, that all Minnesotans and visitors have access to public lands and waters, that we continue to have great fishing, camping, and wildlife viewing opportunities, and overall, more so than anything else, that the public of all abilities, backgrounds, and interests has a safe and satisfying outdoor recreation experience. We just recently did a park survey, which we'll share with you, that shows 90% of the people out there using the system, 90% plus, are very satisfied with the experience they receive. So very happy about that. The last three categories we have here, assets, forest roads and bridges, Drill Corps Library, and statewide asset preservation. We have more than 2,000 miles of state forest roads that provide access to almost 5 million acres of land. We need to deal with some bridges, maintenance, replacement, and also deal with some culverts on this system. You can see some pictures there of that. There's more information in your fact sheet. The Drill Corps Library, if you have not ever seen the Drill Corps Library and you're in Hibbing, and you want to see something that I think is pretty fascinating, please let us know. We'll take you for a tour of the Drill Corps Library. State law requires all mineral exploratory borers to submit a quarter of their portion to the state. This library is full. We're putting materials in storage right now. It does bring in people from all over the world to study these geological resources. What we're looking for is expanding onto the building, about $600,000 for the expansion. And actually, you see the shelves in there. This is kind of unique. We need $400,000 for shelving. That is part of the building, but each shelf holds over a ton or 2,000 pounds of materials. You go in there, you find what you're looking for. You have to get the forklift operator to pull down the pallet for you to go through, but there are people from all over the world coming in studying our geological resources, and the kudos that we receive about our system is just amazing, and I think there's hopefully strong support to expand this. Statewide asset preservation, we're asking for $2 million. DNR has assets, building assets valued at over $390 million. 745 buildings need some help. We estimate a $35 million need in asset renewal, or what they call the capital iceberg, so to speak. However, many of the projects that we discussed are asset preservation related, fish hatcheries, our state parks, our state trails, all of those are assets as well, and we are maintaining them. We can provide you more information on this as you desire, and also in the fact sheet, there's some information as well. Just summarizing, we need the conservation agenda, access to forest resources, providing for recreational use, resource management, and forest product transportation, and making sure that state-owned buildings and facilities provide for public safety and satisfy the increasing demands for services. And now I think you have a better understanding of what hopefully the new conservation frontier will hold for us and those pressing demographic and other pressures that are pushing us in our priority areas that we have. And we made it.
That was a very good job. Are there questions here? We were going to have a motion from Representative Doty about minutes, but are there questions before we do that? I don't see any questions. Good job.
Thank you very much.
Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, we need to approve minutes from March 27th, March 29th, October 3rd, November 7th, January 7th, January 11th, and February 11th. I would move approval of those minutes.
Does anybody have any questions about the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that Vice Chair Doty has read them thoroughly and that they're all accurate.
Thank you.
We're ready.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any objections?
So approved.
Thank you all. Our next meeting is tomorrow, and for those of you who weren't here when we started this morning, we are going to try to get to all the bills for which there are requests, and it's 80 plus at this point. One of the things we're going to do to help the process along is to have some of the bills heard in our subcommittee. But the full committee will meet tomorrow afternoon for 4 hours. The only way we could get this all done is through extra scheduling time. I know you've gotten many emails from our committee administrator about our extra time to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to be heard. So, with that, no questions, meeting is adjourned.